Are you ready to cheat on your wife? No, I'm not talking about that kind of cheating. I'm talking about gaining an unfair advantage on how to understand your wife better, love her deeper, avoid unnecessary arguments, and even have more sex with her. That's right. Based on the success of our Marriage Secrets for Men boot camps, we're finally sharing the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men with the public. This is the quick reference must-have go-to guide for husbands and wannabe husbands that can help stack the odds in your favor. The Bible tells us to live with our wives in an understanding way. Well, the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men is your shortcut to doing that. So you'll learn 4 questions you can ask your wife in every argument to avoid future arguments. You'll learn the 45 questions you can ask her to learn and master her heart. 50 ways to love your wife better. 6 things you can say to her to manage her response before you damage her emotions. 10 things you can do right now that will lead to more sex. 8 ways to get her to stop ignoring you, even 49 ways to have more meaningful conversations with your wife, and much, much more. See, this is the manual every divorced man wishes he had before he got married. Well, at least I did. And I'm so God confident that the Marriage Cheat Sheet will become one of the most valuable referred to resources in your marriage library that if you don't think so, just send it back for a full refund. Trust me, next to our Marriage Secrets for Men Bootcamp, this will be the 2nd best investment you'll ever make in your marriage. Now, to get your copy of the Marriage Cheat Sheet for Men on sale for a limited time only, just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the store button. That's realmenconnect.com.
Welcome to Real Men Connect. Are you ready to be the extraordinary man, husband, father, and leader God called and created you to be? Then get ready to receive wisdom and guidance from some of the country's most respected men of faith as you learn everything you need to know to go from good man to great man, God's way. No judgment, no shame. Just real men with real challenges seeking real change. All for God's glory.
Hello, mighty men of God, and welcome to the Real Men Connect podcast, where we help good men become great men God's way. I'm your host, Dr. Joe Martin, and every week we interview some of the nation's most respected and accomplished men of faith to find out what it really takes to become the kind of husband, father, and spiritual leader God called and created us to be. And each interview session is packed with practical, proven biblical principles you can immediately apply in your relationships, on your job, and in your community. Guys, do you know what time it is today? It's time for us to flip the script and bring on a woman on our show on the Real Men Connect podcast. And guys, you know, I get super excited about bringing women on because, you know, if we're bringing a woman on our show, that means she must be very, very special. And her name is Linda Rooks. And let me introduce you to Linda Rooks before we bring on the air. She's the author of Broken Heart on Hold, Surviving Separation and Fighting for Your Marriage While Separated, A Practical Guide for the Brokenhearted. And she knows what it's like firsthand to fight for your marriage. Now, being married for more than 20 years, she and her husband, Marv, were separated for 3 years before reuniting. They now have been married for over 40 years. Today, not only is their marriage thriving, but together they lead a crisis marriage class in Central Florida. So she's based out of where I'm from Florida. I didn't know if you knew that, Linda, but I'm from Florida.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, but I live in Chattanooga, Tennessee now. But I want the people to know also that Linda, as a freelance writer, Linda's writings have appeared in many national publications, including editions of Chicken Soup for the Soul, Focus on the Family, Home Life, and Today's Christian Woman. And she's also appeared on TV and radio across North America. And she's now making an appearance on the Real Men Connect podcast. And she and Marv have 2 married daughters and 5 grandchildren. And we invited Linda on the show today to talk to us about her latest book, The Fight for Your Marriage book, While Separated, as well as discuss the challenges and the impact of a separation. So this is a heavy topic, but I can't wait to talk to Linda about it. So please join me in welcoming my guest, Linda Rooks, to the show. Thank you for joining us, Linda.
Well, thanks for having me on. I look forward to talking to all you guys.
And Linda, we were talking before we came on the air, and I was telling you that I have a million questions for you, and I'm asking that the Holy Spirit lead me in the ones that I think that the men want to know about the most. But before we get started, Linda, I know even though you're a female and we make fun of having females on the show every once in a while, we treat you as if you were a man. And we always ask men when they come on the show to give us their favorite Bible verse that's their anchor verse for this season in their life. So Linda, I will know as a female, what is yours in this season?
My favorite scripture is Romans 8:28. All things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to His purpose. And that particular scripture is not only my favorite verse, but it is pivotal in why I even wrote this book and how I came to write this book. And if you want me to go into that now, I can. But my, as you said earlier, my husband and I were separated for 3 years. And it was a very, very painful time. And when we finally got back together, well, let me backtrack just a second. While we were going through it, since I'm a writer, and when I was going through a really painful time, I would sit down at my computer and I would write about what I was going through. And I would write until God brought me to a place of peace each time. And I did that over and over and over and over. And when we got back together, I read what I'd written and I thought, my goodness, you know, this might help other people. Mm-hmm. And I showed it to Marv and he read it, my husband Marv, and he read them and he looked at me and he said, Linda, this is a Romans 8:28. This is how we can take all the pain and all the stuff that's happened in our life and use it for good to help other people. And so what I had written, you know, that he was looking at, that became my first book, Broken Heart on Hold. But then after hearing from lots and lots of readers from that book, I ended up writing my new book, Fighting for Your Marriage While Separated, because the first book really helps a person heal emotionally and spiritually, but it doesn't give all the practical answers. And this book gives the practical answers. It really helps a person know what to do and how to respond here and there and all the different things that, you know, the crazy complexities and confusion of a separation. It helps a person navigate that time.
You know, and Linda, that's what I love about your book. And I've already recommended to two guys before we even interviewed. I had you on the show because it was so practical. And I guess because I work with men and minister to men and mentor and coach men, they're always looking for practical ideas and advice. And you're such a great writer. And I'm trying to see how can I put this in a place that doesn't seem like I'm insulting you. You write for men. I thought your book was well written that men can enjoy as well. It's not just, you know, for women. But I know that your heart, you have a heart for women. So I'm glad that you did answer that of how the book came about. But I want you to tell us a little bit more about what had happened between you and Marv that led to the separation. What started all that in the first place?
Well, we actually had a good marriage to begin with. I mean, we were just very much in love and everything was wonderful to begin with. But the biggest problem that we had is we did not resolve issues. And so he came from a family that was more, you know, peace at any price type of thing. And I came from a family where people did argue and there was some dissension in the home. And so I was not afraid of arguing. He did not like conflict. And so when conflict would come up, he kind of wanted to stay away from it. So we ended up just really not resolving things. And it got to a point at one point where we'd have a big argument, he'd walk out the door, he'd come back an hour later, and we'd both act like nothing had happened. And so after a while, when you don't resolve conflict, the bitterness starts to build up. The resentment, you know, there's resentment, you know, this, he's not changing, you know, this is not happening. And so I mean, each of us had some resentment and the bitterness and everything. And finally, he got to a point where he just kind of checked out, you know. He just decided, he left. And so I was the one still at home. It was on an Easter, and we had a big argument, and he left. And I thought he'd come home, but he didn't. And he didn't come home. And one of his friends went over and talked to him, and he said that he was just chilling out, and he was just didn't know when he was going to come back. And so it ended up being 3 years before we ended up really, you know, reconciling.
Now, Linda, this was after about 20 years into the marriage. Is that correct?
Yeah, over 20 years. He was 25 or something at that point. So,
you know, you bring up a point that I have a list of questions I wanted to ask you, but I got to bring this question into it now because you just kind of alluded to it, because it was one of the most eye-opening chapters in your book, which was chapter 2. I know there's a lot of great chapters in here, but I guess from dealing with men so much, and in chapter 2 of your book, you mentioned about degrees of assertiveness and passivity. And I thought that was so enlightening. Could you explain what you mean by that and how that can precipitate a separation or even a divorce? Because obviously that's why I'm bringing it up now, because you just mentioned it, the two dynamics between you and Marv. And could you talk more about that?
Yeah, I think this is one of the most important issues that happens, most common issues, I should say, that happens when a separation occurs. And I think particularly for men, when the wife leaves, I think it's probably even more true that this is very often, when I deal with the men, this is very often the issue. And what I mean by assertive and passive, it's not that assertive and or passive, either one is wrong. It's just the degree of assertiveness and the degree of passiveness makes a huge difference. And so very often when a separation occurs and there is this dynamic in the relationship, it's the passive person who leaves. Mm-hmm. And that is usually because they just have not felt like they had a voice, that the other person is the one who always makes the decisions or something, and they don't have a voice. And now when I talk about assertive can be, of course, abusive and, you know, really extreme. Right. But most of the time, it's more, you know, you just have a person who's very confident about what they think and how they feel, and they express their feelings. But the passive person, on the passive side, the passive person may be somebody that isn't really good at arguing, or they don't like conflict, like my husband was that way. Or, you know, it can be a woman who's just trying to be submissive, and she thinks that's what she's supposed to do and go along. And so on that side, that can be the passive. On the assertive side, it can be what I just said. And it can be more than that, because a lot of times, you know, if you're confident what you think, you're confident how you feel, and your spouse your wife doesn't go along with it, you keep pressing your point over and over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that more assertive person is somebody who really just wants to be in their wife's life all the time. You know, they don't want to give her space. She wants some time alone, and he doesn't want that. You know, he wants to just be together all the time. He doesn't want her to be going up and reading a book or talking to a friend. He wants her right there. You know, that can be it. So there's different the assertiveness can take different forms. And so a lot of times you don't really think, well, I'm not being overbearing or anything like that. But, you know, the fact that, you know, you just keep pressing your point over and over and over and over, and you won't give up. And finally, the other person just, okay, fine, you know, gives up. You know, they get tired of arguing, or they don't like the conflict or whatever. And so that passive person, as I said earlier, starts feeling like they don't have a voice. They just, no matter what they do, they're controlled by the other person. And so they just give up, and they just finally leave.
You know, Linda, I got to tell you, the book is great, but if they didn't get the book for just chapter 2, it could be so enlightening, because when I was reading it, it just brought back so many flashbacks of not only a failed marriage that I was in, but also so many men that I've dealt with, and seeing both sides of it, the man who's been acting passively and the man who's been acting assertively and not knowing. Again, I mean, there's so many things I could dig into that would take so much time, but I feel like I need to at least ask you a follow-up question to that, is what advice would you give to a person on both sides of the fence if he finds himself being a passive man or an assertive man that can prevent it ever getting to a separation or leading to divorce?
Well, if you're on the assertive side, the thing that you need to do is to start giving your partner some space. You need to start backing up and, you know, even apologizing, saying, you know, I think that I, you know, I've been a little bit too assertive and I want to hear your side of things. And so I'm going to back off a little bit and just start giving them more freedom, because basically, you know, if you need to give the other person freedom, and the other person, the one who's passive, they need to take the responsibility to start expressing themselves. And again, they can just say, you know, I'm afraid I've probably not been very good at expressing my side of some of the things that I feel, and I'm going to try to speak up a little bit more and tell you what I think. And probably the assertive person will appreciate that, because a lot of times that assertive person is really frustrated that the more passive person just doesn't say what they think and what mm-hmm. they want. And so the assertive person sometimes feels like they're walking around on eggshells. I don't know what to say, or we know what will make her upset or what will make her mad. And so on both sides, you know, you need both the assertive one to give the freedom and the passive one to take the responsibility to start speaking up. Even if you're, you know, if you're one of these people that you hate conflict and you see it coming and you just want to walk away, and if you can just face your fear, you know, or you can even say something like, you know, I'm feeling overwhelmed by what we're talking about right now, and I need to take a break for a couple of minutes and think about it or pray about it, and then we can come back and talk about it. But right now I'm feeling overwhelmed and I just can't deal with it. So that's another thing that the passive person can do.
You know, and it makes you think too, because mm-hmm. I know in the book you mentioned about knowing the degrees in which you're assertive or passive, but it's also interesting the dynamic between two assertive people and two passive people.
Well, that's another one.
that's a whole other topic.
yes, I've seen that.
Yeah. So let's get it more into it now, because I just thought that was interesting. That chapter just jumped out at me the most, probably because I never paid attention to it to see how that could lead to conflict in a marriage. But you said earlier also that unresolved conflict could lead to bitterness. And that's usually what happens. But let me, and I hope this is not an unfair question for you, Linda. The Bible never directly mentions anything about separation when it comes to marriage, only divorce. Do you think separation is biblical? And if so, why or why not if it's not?
Well, it does have something in the Bible about, you know, if a couple agrees that they can stay apart from each other for a little while, that they can make that agreement. So in terms of an agreed upon separation, mm-hmm. You know, there are separation agreements that you can come to. If you go to a counselor, they can write up something where you make agreements about how the money will be used and what to do with the children and things like that, and how sometimes about how long it will be and how, but you know, the fact that neither one will be dating or anything like that. So that can be addressed that way. And sometimes that can be a positive thing. If people just are just really just hurting each other too badly, to have an agreed upon time like that can be a positive. But if you're going to do it that way, you really need to have somebody there monitoring it and helping you stay accountable to, you know, making sure that neither of you are going off and, you know, doing things that you shouldn't be doing. So
yeah. So you're basically saying have a mediator involved in the process and coming up with some agreement. So what would you say to that guy who is telling his wife, you know, well, you know, the Bible didn't say we should separate or we can separate, you know, that kind of thing. What would you tell him if he's coming at his wife with that? That it's not biblical, you can't do this, and we shouldn't be doing this?
That's a real good question. Well, I would say to him that he needs to really be sensitive to his wife's needs and realize her emotional needs. And to go to that scripture, I'm afraid I don't have it, you know, the scripture verse at my fingertips, but there is one that does say that if a couple wants to stay, to separate for a little, it doesn't say separate, but it says, it's talking about sex, I think, more.
Right.
But to have time of prayer, then if you kind of, if that's what she is asking for, one of the things that's really important to realize is that, you know, if you can't allow her to have this, you know, she might be more apt to just go for a divorce, or you're digging in and you're being that assertive person that is just pushing her away. So one of the things that if one of the people really want a separation, the person that doesn't, and very often that's the case, one does and one doesn't, the person who doesn't, one of the first things they really need to do is to give that other person space. They need to give them some time, because if a person has left, or if they want a separation, they're talking about a separation, talking about a divorce, whatever. Now, divorce might be a little, you know, there may be other issues going on, but if they're wanting to separate, what's happening is they're running from some kind of conflict. Now, that conflict might be conflict that's in the home, mm-hmm. or it might be a conflict that's just raging around in their own head. You know, there may be some issues or some things that they're dealing with on their own that they just really need some time alone to reflect on. And so if you can give your wife a little space, you may be able to resolve everything beautifully. But again, if it's something that you can agree on and you can have a counselor or somebody monitor it for you, and you are, we're praying, you know, you're actually working on yourselves. You know, you're not just going off there to party, you know. Mm-hmm. You're separating in order to, for each of you to pray about what you need to do to make the relationship better, and what you need to do to become healthier yourself personally. And if you're doing that, you know, that can be a positive thing.
Now, Linda, we keep bringing up the word space, and spouse needs space. And I know for some of the men out there who are listening, that may rub them a little bit the wrong way, or kind of, you know, just they don't want to hear that word, that my wife needs space. But it's a legitimate concern. It's a legitimate desire. So what advice would you give us as men when our wives are asking for space, potentially if they're already out of the home, or if they're even in the home and they need space? What does that look like in practical terms?
Well, if they have actually left, if the wife has actually left, then space is very important in terms of not calling them, not emailing them, not texting them. I mean, you really need to give them some space, because what's happening is when the person leaves, they are running from conflict, and it may be a conflict in the home, or it might be a conflict that's just raging within their own mind. But they need some time to just think and kind of sort things out, and then things can improve. But if you pursue them, if you chase after them with questions, or what are you going to do, or why aren't you coming back, or I love you, and, you know, or maybe even sending them flowers every day or whatever, you know, anything like that, you're chasing after them, and it's going to make them pull away more. So what you need to do is, as I said, not call, not text, not email or anything for just a little while, you know, give them that space and let them just have some time. Now, if they're still in the home and they say they need some space, then just by just not pursuing them a lot with asking them to do things, not expecting anything from them, definitely not sex, not even hugs, you know, not even kind words. You know, if they need some space, if you can just kind of let them be, just let them kind of do their own thing for a little bit until they feel safer. That can really help. And when I say one important thing too, is if the wife has pulled away and she's kind of growing cold with everything, if the husband can really, just do a lot of positive things. And when you start actually, you know, communicating more, if you can when you do communicate, if you can be positive, you say positive things to her. Mm-hmm. You know, you say things like, you know, I understand, you know, you're going through some things that you need to think through, and that's fine, you know, and you kind of just accept that. You reaffirm her. That will make her feel safer. And so you go through this time. I mean, basically, you may need to give it a few months even, really not expecting anything in return, just being kind and being supportive and being positive, and not expecting anything. And if you can do that, I mean, if it's really a separation, you know, if it's real serious, I would say give her 6 months, you know, really just giving and not expecting anything in return, you know, not even a thank you, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, you go pick up the kids at school for her, you know, you expect a thank you, but she won't even say that. And I wouldn't expect it, you know. It's just a time when you need to do a lot of giving and until she feels safer around you. And part of the whole thing in a separation when it happens is, one of the goals, I should say, is to come to a point where both of you can feel safer around one another. Mm-hmm. Safety is very important.
You know, I don't think we think about that a lot when we're, because we just assume the other person feels safe, you know. Mm. But not actually making that a discussion. But typically, if there's an impasse and there's not communication, somebody is feeling unsafe. Somebody right. thinks that it's not safe to share. I, you know, going back to your book, you mentioned about responding positively. I thought that was very important, because, but you also mentioned about surrounding yourself with supportive people. Because I know as men, especially if, let's say, for instance, they're on that assertive end we were talking about earlier, more than likely an assertive person is going to be patient. You know, we all struggle with patience, but I think the assertive person, probably more so than the average person, because they're used to getting things done, making things happen. Right. And right. I think that can really hurt them in pursuit of reconciling with the person.
Exactly.
So, but what if they're the passive person and they're thinking, okay, I'll give that person as much time in the world, but they're not. What could they be doing, because their nature is not to do anything? What would you say to that person?
Well, that's a good point. Well, for that person, I would say that for them to be positive again, you know, to say positive things. And if in this case, if you're talking about where the person who has left, the wife has been more assertive, or you're talking about that, and the husband who has been left is more passive.
Yeah, the husband who is the husband who's passive, he stayed, but the woman left and she's assertive. Well, he could be passive too, and she left, but I'm talking about him being passive is the focus. He's thinking, okay, we're not getting a divorce, but he's just sitting there thinking, okay, this will work itself out if I just give it time.
That's a good point. Well, I think one thing you alluded to a minute ago was to surround yourself with some men who can really encourage you and help you to really do the right things and support you and pray for you. And praying about it is a very important thing. You know, one of the very most important things in all of this is to really be able to put your spouse on the back burner and take it to God and let him just really lead you, and let him show you what you need to do and what the changes that you need to make. So if you're the passive person or the assertive person, either one, and you're back there thinking, well, I guess I'm not supposed to do anything, or I don't know what to do. Basically, the most important thing you can do is to be asking God to show you your part of the problem, what you need to do to change, how you can be a better husband, how you can, you know, what are some of the things that you need to do. So you can listen to shows like this. You can read some Christian books.
Right.
Go to church more often. you know, listen to other radio shows and things like that, to really let God speak into your heart and your mind and to show you what you need to do. And then when you have contact with your wife, to start doing some of those things. You know, you don't go and you say, okay, oh, I realize I've been doing this and this and this, and I'm going to change and I'm going to be a new person, and so you can come back and I'm fine. No, that won't work, because she is going to be thinking, okay, he's just saying that because he wants me back.
Right.
So basically, it's kind of show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. You know, you need to just let her see the changes that have been taking place in you and how you've changed, not telling her I've changed. The one thing you can do is to, as you start realizing some of the things that you've done that are wrong and the ways that you need to change, one of the things you can do is to apologize, you know, write a letter or in person, either whichever you feel more comfortable doing, but to tell her, you know, I do realize I really messed up in this area or doing this or whatever it is you're realizing, and say, I'm really sorry, you know, and I really want to be a better person. I want to be a better man. I want to be a better husband. And so that can go a long way. You know, that could be very good.
You know, Linda, and I'm glad you brought up show, don't tell, because I think a lot of men really need to listen to that. Because we can say all the right things and apologize till the cows come home, but they're looking to see a different person. Mm-hmm. Not based on the words. We gave words when we said our vows.
Right.
You know? We think, how's that right. Working out for us? You know, but they're looking for a different person. And there's no better way to demonstrate a different person than showing them a different person. And Linda, you mentioned something in your book that I thought Linda lost her mind when you put it in your book. You said separation could be viewed as an opportunity to be better, to get better, and to do better. And as I continue to read the book, I'm like, she's absolutely right. Because when that person is separated from you, you have a chance to now look at yourself and ask God to examine your heart and to look at you. Now, that's what you can do, but some people choose not to do it. But that is a moment in time that you can say, okay, God, now work on me, as opposed to working on our marriage. Work on me and reveal to me as you see me, and what do I need to do to change? You know, so when you made that step, do you ever get any pushback from that separation can be seen as an opportunity?
Well, when we do our classes, you know, the classes that we do, the men and women actually do not interact. They're separate. The men are in groups and the women are in groups. And so always we have both men and women, they'll, you know, well, if you would just change my husband, or if you would just change my right. wife, our marriage would be great, you know. So they always start off with thinking, you know, it's their spouse that mm-hmm. needs to change. But by the time we get through with it, most of them have begun to really realize that they needed to change. And that's one of the neat things that we do in our class, that they see the changes that they have made and they can make, each one of them. And so, you know, they do start off with that idea, but by the time they've gone through the class and they see the different things that they can do to change, they realize, you know, that they needed. I mean, we all need to grow. You know, none of us are perfect. You know, none of us have arrived, and we all need to realize that God has work to do with each one of us. And it's an opportunity to take, you know, to say, okay, God, what do you want to show me? You know?
You know, I had a good friend tell me, he says, love is defined by saying, I'll do it first. You know, I'll go first. I'll try first. I'll apologize first. Mm-hmm. I will change first. Is looking to take that step before waiting for the other person to do it. But, you know, one of the biggest challenges we have as men is this time thing. Because we want to be fixed overnight, even though it may have taken 20 years to get that way. We want it just in 20 minutes.
Right.
And we want it to be resolved. And I think that brings a lot of tension into it. But you, if anybody could talk to... about patience, or long-suffering. I think that you're an expert in it for the fact that you were separated from Marv for 3 years. That's a long time. I don't know too many men who could have handled that. That's why I would love to have Marv on the show to talk about what he did. But since we have you on the show, I want to know, 3 years is a long time to be separated. And most people probably would just throw in the towel and think, you know, say, it's not going to be reconciled. What did you do during that time away from Marv? And what did you learn from it?
Well, you know, one of the things that kind of got me thinking about the fact that maybe it might take some time was a friend of mine when it was just a few weeks after he'd left, and I was going on and on and on about everything that was happening. And she said, Linda, call him up and tell him to take a year and figure himself out. He's just confused. And of course, I said, a year? That just sounded horrible. What do you mean, a year? And she said, well, think about it. Think about it. If he takes a year and he figures himself out and everything, you know, he works things out and you get back together and you have 20 or 30 happy years together after that, wouldn't it be worth it?
Wow.
And I thought, well, yes, it would, you know, and as it turned out, it was 3 years. But I mean, basically, I mean, I loved my husband. I knew he strayed away from the Lord. Mm-hmm. And I knew, you know, that the real person I loved was there. I knew he was there somewhere underneath all of that. And so I was praying a lot of what I was doing was I was reading every Christian book I could find. I was listening to praise music to keep me focused on the Lord, because you don't want to, it's hard to stay focused on God. You want to go into your emotions. You know, you're feeling angry or you're feeling sad or you're feeling, I want to just have this over with or whatever. I mean, you go around and around with your emotions. And so praise music was important for me. But also just really reading Christian books, listening to the Christian podcasts like yours or different things like that to just keep yourself up and letting God really talk to you, you know, spending time in the Bible, spending time praying, just all of that kind of thing. And little by little, letting God change you. And when I realized, I mean, it was a year, we'd been separated for a year before I really realized that any of it was my fault. So at that point, I think I could say that at the point that I started seeing my part in it, I realized that I needed to make some changes. And so I think when you realize, okay, I need to make changes, and you see how it takes you time. It takes time for you to change. You know, you're not going to change overnight. And so as you start seeing how you can be growing in the middle of all of that, it starts giving you a little more patience with the whole process. But one of the things that happened with us, I mean, there were different stages of our separation. And 2 years into our separation, our daughter was getting married, and so I didn't want her wedding to be a real difficult time because of us, mm-hmm. because of my husband and me. And so I actually went on a fast and prayed about it, and at the end of that, I felt that the Lord was leading me to invite my husband to pick out the food for the reception, and so we did. He did, and after that, we spent a little time together that evening, and we had a very pleasant time together. And he then after that started asking me out. We started going out to dinner. We started going to movies and doing different things as friends. You know, it was nothing physical whatsoever. And we weren't talking about our issues. We weren't talking about our problems. We just were being friends. And that, we went a whole year like that. And we were reestablishing our relationship in a very safe way. And that's one of the things that we both highly recommend to people, that they take a period of time just being friends. And there's a whole lot of stories in my book, as you've noticed, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing about it, there are many, many who reconciled, and every one of them had a time of friendship before they actually got back together. Mm-hmm. because if you get back together too fast, then you may be just taking all of the baggage back into the marriage, you know, if no change has really taken place. And so that period of friendship allows people to kind of see each other, how what kind of changes have taken place, see if they're for real or if they're just, you know, putting on a show. And so that was an important time for us. So those are some of the things that I was doing during our separation.
I tell you, Linda, I could talk to you all day about this topic because, one, I've gone through it myself, but I didn't come on the winning side of it. But like you said, Romans 8:28, all things work together for good. I'm in a great marriage now. But I can look back, obviously, and look at some of the things that I, mistakes that I made, things that I did wrong. And I'm telling you, if I would have had your book, my current wife would probably be upset right now. But, but if I had your book, I'm seeing so many potholes I could have avoided and some of the things that some of the ditches I ran into. And I realize now that I'm giving guys good coaching and mentoring because I'm learning from my mistakes. But to see how you articulate it so well in your book has just been fascinating to me. And even though you brushed past it kind of quickly, I'm going to bring up something you said because I got some revelation from it. You said that the friend told you, no, tell him to take a year off to find himself. And I got into like a year. That's a long time. But I just thought about the wisdom in that as well. Since we as men we tend to get impatient when it comes to wanting things fixed like overnight, by even giving a time frame like that, even if we don't really know how long it's going to take, but it kind of like it takes the pressure off in a sense, don't you think?
That, oh, yeah.
Because he's thinking, could it be a week? Could it be a month? No, we're going to take a year off. You know, I'll give you a year to, quote, find yourself. Or because I think that takes the edge off a little bit. And at the same time, while you're doing that, like you said, you're telling him to take a year, but you also had a year to spend on you.
That's right.
To find
that's
yourself, right. Even though that probably wasn't the intention.
Right. Right.
I love
it. And even if you don't give it a time frame like that, if you can say something like, you know, I know that, you know, you're trying to figure some things out and, you know, you just, you know, take the time you need to figure things out. And I'm going to be working on myself, too. I know that I've got some issues I need to deal with. And, you know, if you can say positive things like that, that mm-hmm. takes the pressure off.
Yeah. I mean, it's good, great stuff, Linda. Like I said, I could talk to you forever about this. I already know now we're going to nix the man up questions because I only probably got into like maybe 20% of my questions. But okay. This is good stuff. We get some good stuff. But I'm going to give you now, I'm going to throw a tougher question at you. All right. And I'm going to give you some pushback a little bit because, mm-hmm. you know, obviously you and Marv, you reconciled. Everything worked out great. But during a separation, how can a person know when it's time to just throw in the towel and call it quits? Or should he? Ever?
Well, I think you need to just stay totally connected to the Lord. And that's what you need to do. I mean, I generally don't feel like you need to throw in the towel unless the other person gets married. You know, if right. the other person gets married, you know, that's done. You know, they're in another relationship. So then that would be a time, you know, you're divorced and they're remarried. Other than that, I have seen so many marriages reconcile. I mean, even after 4 years, 5 years, 7 years, I mean, it's just... If you are thinking, okay, I want to throw in the towel so I can get married to somebody else, mm-hmm. You know, that's what you're thinking. You know, that would be. But if you're not thinking that, if you're not thinking, well, I want to get married to somebody else, then why even throw in the towel? You know, so they usually, most people who are divorce experts say that you should wait 2 years after being divorced before you try to get into another relationship because otherwise you're probably taking baggage with you. But anyway, it's mainly really, really staying connected to the Lord and letting the Lord lead you. And, you know, if you have a spouse that is, I don't know, I guess the thing that I would say is if you had a wife who, you know, she went off and joined a Buddhist camp or something, you know, and it was some thing that was just
Yeah, she's turned just, back on God, or she's left the faith or something.
Well, even if she's left the faith, I mean, she can still come back. But if she's made some real strong decisions that where she's entering into a lifestyle that is just incompatible or something, I mean, that might be something. But still, even then, I mean, I cannot really give an answer for that, because it's up to God. God can do anything. He can change people. He does miracles all the time. You know, I've seen amazing things happen in people's lives, and so it there really isn't an answer. God has the answer, and you really have to just press into the Lord and let Him show you, you know, where to go, one step at a time. You know,
yeah.
You can't say, okay, I'm going to give it 2 years, and if it doesn't work, then I'm going to get a divorce. You know, I mean, if you start doing that, then you're just ticking the time away. But it's a matter of just really giving it to the Lord and walking one day at a time with Him and letting Him show you what to do. And the final thing, the most important thing that I feel has to happen before a marriage is reconciled, and again, every story in the book has the person did this, is to truly surrender your marriage to the Lord, to let go. And that is so hard. You know, you don't want to let go. You want to, you know, you want to do this, or you want to do that, you want to figure something out. But if you can completely let go, really put it in God's hands and let Him take charge, that's when things start happening to turn things around.
You know, Linda, as far as it is a tough question, I knew it was going to be a tough question. I know when I'm dealing with guys, that's coming at me with, well, Joe, how long? You know, how long must I wait, and how long? And my response to them has always been, you stay faithful to God. You can't, you know, you're not going to be held accountable for her actions. You can be held accountable for your action, not her actions. And you remain faithful to God and walk with God. Like you said, seek God's heart and trust Him in His mm-hmm. guidance, in His direction. And you got to let whatever happens, happens. But let God lead you, and you can pray for your spouse. But it is a tough situation to be in, to do that. And my heart just breaks for anybody who's in that situation, because they're left. I wish I could say it the way you said it in the book about, well, you said it, you described it in the title of your first book about that. How do you say it in the first book? You said the heart that's waiting, or
broken heart on hold.
On hold, yeah. A broken heart that's on hold. Your heart is still breaking, and you want the pain to stop. And yet you're held in limbo because you don't know where the relationship is going. But I think it depends on what relationship are you pursuing. Are you pursuing the marriage, or are you pursuing a deeper relationship with Christ?
Absolutely.
Because I think that's where the healing is going to take place. It's not going to take place in that marriage that is already broken. You know? So, but wow, I tell you, it's just, my heart just goes out to people who are going through that. I wish they didn't have to go through it. But as you said in your Bible verse, Romans 8:28, God's going to work it out for good, even if it doesn't feel good at the moment. But I want to ask you this, though. Linda, you have mentioned in the book, and I thought it was a very powerful statement, and I guess you've given us some answers to it already, but you said that it's possible to fight for your marriage and still win, even when your spouse has turned away from you. How is that possible?
Well, that is kind of the point of the book a lot, is that one person can fight for their marriage, and you can see things turn around, even if you're fighting for your marriage by yourself. Because one of the things, you know, if one person is really committed to their marriage and they're willing to do what they need to do, things can turn around. And as I said earlier, you know, we have seen so many people. We've had people come to our classes by themselves. Their mm-hmm. spouse was totally out there one way or the other, you know, even involved with other people sometimes, you know, but the one person would keep coming to the class. Some of them came three times, you know, through our class three times. And we only do it once a year, so that meant 3 years.
Wow.
So, their marriages came back together, and they're wonderful. They just beautiful marriages. In fact, one couple, she came to the class 3 years in a row, and they got back together, and they now lead the same kind of marriage 911 class that we lead in another church. So that's how wonderfully their marriage came back together. But it was one person who stuck it out. There was a man who came to our class one time by himself. He went, did everything he was supposed to do, did all the lessons, you know, was talking to all of us. And the next year, his wife was, I think, you know, out in the world someplace, you know, going out with in bars or whatever. And the next year, he decided he wanted to come back to the class again. And I got another email from him after him saying he wanted to come back to the class, saying, "My wife wants to come too." Wow. And she came. And in the group, the first group that we had, one of the questions is often, you know, why are you here? Why did you decide to come? And she said, "I saw so much change happen in my husband. I wanted to see what would happen to me if I came." And they got back together by the end of that class, and they're still together. And that was several years ago, and they're doing wonderfully. So,
what you're doing, Linda, you're dispelling the myth that it takes two to make. Yeah, it takes two to sustain a marriage. But you're saying it doesn't take two to reconcile a marriage.
Well, ultimately, it takes two, you know, in the end. But if one person can do it by themselves, and
they're still
home. And one of the principles too is that, you know, when one person, there's a lot of different ways where one person starts making some changes, it kind of causes the other person to change in their reactions to them, and. Like in a lot of our marriages, we have these negative circular patterns, that reactionary patterns that go around and around, you know, where one person does this and the other person does that, and then the other person responds with this. And if you can break the chain of that, and you do something different, you know, instead of reacting in the way you always react, you react in a different way. It forces the other person to react in a little different way. And so it just spins everything off in another direction.
You know, Linda, let's give the listeners some out there. And I don't even know what the answer is going to be, but I'm assuming it's going to be, you're going to give me something encouraging when I ask you this question. Because in your book, you share the stories, like you mentioned, of others who've endured the pain of separation. So based on the research, because I haven't done the research on this, I don't know. What does the data show on separation and the percentage of marriages that are actually reconciled? I know you guys have had success in your groups, but I'm talking about overall for that man who's thinking, wow, we're separated. There's no hope for us. What's the data show?
Well, of course, the research, the data is not real positive.
Okay. Wow, I was hopeful.
I mean, I'm hoping to change that with my book.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I'm hoping that will all change around. If people read the book and they can see what to do. The problem is when separation happens, people usually don't have any idea what to do.
Right.
Like you were saying, and we react out of our emotions. We do what comes naturally, you know, like if your wife leaves, you know, a man may think, oh, well, the thing I need to do is chase after her and take her flowers every day and tell her how much I love her. And, you know, I want to get back together. And that might be the natural thing for him to say, but that's not the best thing for him to say. Mm-hmm. And so if a person can really do it right, they really can see things turn around. And that's what's been so exciting to me, to see so many marriages come back together. I mean, we've had lots and lots, you know, through our ministry, and we have some other friends who do ministry like this who have similar responses. And so those people who, like us, are doing the same kind of thing, you know, we do see just lots of marriages come back together. So there really is hope, and I don't want anybody to feel. If you're going to go off and just do it the natural way, no, there probably isn't a lot of hope. But if you can really cling to God and you can make the right choices at the right time, take the right steps, you can see things turn around.
You know what, Linda? And I'm glad that I did ask you that question, because basically what you're saying to us is that, yeah, based on the numbers and based on what we see in society, yeah, the numbers do not look good. But it doesn't look good because people don't know what they're doing while they're going through the process.
That's
and
fine.
There's a hole that needs to be filled there. We need to stop doing it in the natural and do it in a supernatural way that goes a little bit against the grain, you know, that is trusting God as opposed to in reconciling that relationship with him first before you reconcile a relationship with your mate. And so you guys are bringing a different spin to it, and you've seen enough success to know that, oh, we don't have to follow the world's way. We can do this in a different way that is going to bring glory to God. Because I mean, whenever I hear people, you know, I love hearing stories about marriages that have been reconciled. And I tell people, I say, it sounds crazy. I say, even though they keep thinking the grass is greener on the other side, it does more for the glory of God in his kingdom to see a marriage reconciled than to see the person remarried in another marriage happen. That's me personally. That's what I think.
Yeah. Well, it's not only that, but for the people themselves, it's wonderful. I mean, like, we have 5 grandchildren right now, and we can enjoy them together, you know, and having that history together, you know, we go back and talk about, you know, the things that happened when we were young and how we went and did this and that and the other thing. I mean, you can't do that, you know, when you've and you're in your second marriage. You know, I'm sure that, you know, I haven't been there, but I'm sure that when you're, you know, you've been married
you're
before.
Right. It's tough.
There's memories you can't bring up, you know. So
you know what's funny, though, Linda, is I, you know, because I'm happily married now in a second marriage, and I learned something, and I realized, and I talked to my wife about this all the time. I said, I don't care how happy we are. You see the fallout, which is going to lead to my next question for you. You can see the fallout of divorce or a marriage that ends in divorce because it's never a clean break. It's never clean. There's always, this is my next question, it's always collateral damage, especially when children are involved.
Oh, yeah.
And so, and you talk about this in your book, but just kind of quickly for us, because we're running out of time, but I wanted to address this issue. How should we communicate a separation to our children and at the same time guard their hearts and provide stability for the family?
Well, that's really important because, like you say, you know, if you get divorced, it's always hard on the children, no matter what. And I do have a chapter on the children, which was written by my daughter, one of my daughters. She wrote it. Mm-hmm. She's a mental health counselor, as well as having survived it herself. And so she writes a lot of this. And so there's many things important. One is to keep things as normal as possible. You know, keep the routines if possible. Don't pour everything out on your child, you know, that you're going through. Don't push all your emotions on them because they're going through their own emotions. They need to deal with their own emotions, and they need to feel free to be able to talk about their negative feelings as well as their positive things. And you need to give them an opportunity, help them find somebody, a safe adult, you know, that they can really talk to honestly, because they're going through a lot and you don't realize that. Give them permission to love your wife. You know, you may have a child that really is siding with you over the thing, and you feel like, you know, she feels like, you know, her mother's really wrong. Well, you know, if give her permission to love her mother and don't say negative things about the mother. In fact, let her hear you say positive things about your wife. So don't speak disrespectfully to them, and pray with them and let them see you leaning on God. Let them see you trusting God, and that can help them as they go through that whole time. So that's some of the things that I think can really help them.
And this is good stuff.
And be sure to tell them that it's not their fault. That's another thing.
Oh, so, most definitely.
Some kids do think it's their fault that you're breaking up. So,
yeah, I can't tell you how many, because I used to work in education. I can't tell you how many times I've had kids come to me and think it was their fault. I know when I was going through my divorce, and I had to let my son know that, Kimberly, it wasn't your fault. And he had this kid in the neighborhood whose family was going through a divorce, and he brought him to, by this time I was a single dad now, he brings him to our house, and he sits him at the kitchen table, He said, Dad, I want you to talk to him. His friend's name was Andrew. He said, I want you to talk to him. I said, about what? He says, his mom and dad are going through divorce, and Andrew thinks it's his fault. And then now he's telling me to talk to his friend, but he's talking to him. His friend's like 10, 11 years old, right? My son says, you know what, Andrew? I used to think it was my fault that my mom and dad got divorced, but I realized it was nothing wrong with me. It was them. Right there, right? So he said, tell him, Dad, it's not his fault. I said, yeah, Andrew, it's not your fault.
Right.
I love kids, man. I know. But I got one more question for you, though, Linda, and I'll let you get out of here. Because what I'm hoping by accomplishing this in this show is bring you on, and I'm hoping that they'll go out and get your book, is that I want to save as many marriages as possible, man. I'm trying not to get even emotional.
Yes, I know. I have the same passion. I want to see people be able to, I want people to know they can, to start off with.
Yeah.
And then to be able to know the steps to take to do it.
You know, because you know, they see me now, Linda, and they keep thinking, oh, but Joe's got a great life. And they don't understand that there still is a little boy who lost his mom and dad, you know. And he's got now see them with separate lives. And yes, I'm happy. No, she's happy. But he still is still heartbroken over it.
Oh, you know,
he's an adult now. And he still and he still talks to me about it. And he still has those feelings about it. And he doesn't want to see another child go through that. So I guess as we close out the show, I want you to really speak to those couples out now, right now, who are going through a separation or thinking about going through a separation. If there was just one thing you wanted to tell them or them to get from your book, what would it be?
I would say to take their time, give it time, give God time to work. You know, don't limit God. Don't say, okay, God, I'm going to give you a year. Mm-hmm. God has his own time frame. And if you can really give it to God and let him take the time that he needs to make changes in both of you, surrender it to God, take your focus off your marriage, take your focus off your mate, and put it all on God and let him do what he needs to do. And that would be the most important thing, I think, to focus on.
Thank you, Linda. Well said. Thank you so much. And I tell you, we prayed before we came on the air, and I'm praying for every man or even woman out there who's listening to this. It's not over. It's not over. God is still on the throne. He's still sovereign.
Right.
He still knows best, and we have to trust him. We have to trust him. He doesn't give up on us, so we don't ever have to give up on him and what he can do in our marriages. And so we've reached the end of our show, Linda. And guys, don't you worry. We'll be back to do it again with another guest. See, this is why I love bringing women on the show. They bring so much to our show. But we'll be back with a new guest and new insights and new lessons. So make sure you don't miss it. And I'd like to thank my guest, Linda Rooks, for joining us today, for being so gracious with their time. And Linda, they don't know, but I know you're a little bit under the weather. And so you were a pioneer and a trooper. You did a great job. And Linda, quickly for our listeners, if they wanted to find out more about this fantastic book that you've written and even find out more about what you and Marv are doing with your classes, what would be the best way for them to reach out to you or connect with you?
Well, they can go to my website, fightingforyourmarriage.net, also brokenheartonhold.com. I also have a blog called Heart Talk, which is lindarooks.com. They can find out, you know, those are two different websites, so they can go to those, although they connect. So if you go to one, you can find the other. But you can find out pretty much everything and other interviews and other things that we're doing. So it's all there.
Well, thank you, Linda. Thank you so much for your honesty, your transparency, and for writing such a wonderful, wonderful book that I'm highly recommending to all the men who I know who are going through a similar situation that we wish they didn't, but you've given them a way to give them some hope and some help if they just take advantage of it. Guys, if you like today's show, please do us a favor, and this is so important. Take about 30 seconds to go over to iTunes and rate the program for us, because it's the best way to help us get this program in the hands, ears, and hearts of men just like you. And please don't keep us a secret. Share us with your friends. So until next time, I'm Dr. Joe Martin, your man builder with RealMenConnect.com, reminding you that we are males by birth, but we are men by choice. So each and every day, choose to be the man that God called and created you to be, because a male is a terrible thing to waste. So until next time, stay strong, stay blessed, and as always, stay in God's grip.
Thank you for listening to the Real Men Connect podcast with Dr. Joe Martin. Real Men Connect isn't just a podcast. It's a mission, ministry, and movement to help good men become the great men God called and created us to be. And the best is yet to come. So if you enjoyed this episode, go ahead and leave us a review in iTunes. It really helps us to build the podcast and to reach, teach, and impact more men, all for the glory of God. And make sure you check out realmenconnect.com to get our free tools and resources to help you go from good man to great man God's way. Again, that's realmenconnect.com. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
Real Men Connect is a listener-supported podcast, and we're now the number one radio podcast on iTunes for Christian men. If this podcast has blessed you in any way and you'd like to help us continue to bless and transform the lives of even more husbands, fathers, sons, and leaders, please prayerfully consider supporting this ministry. Just go to realmenconnect.com and click on the donate button. And may God bless your faithful giving.